Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Indianapolis and became a caddy and an officer of Fellowship of Christian Athletes. He caddied for a number of professionals, including Gary Player, and later became a golf pro himself. He was on the PGA Tour for 11 years. Today, he's a speaker and author, and has just finished writing his sixth book, co-authored with Ken Blanchard, entitled The Mulligan. His basic message is, Jesus is with us every second. His name, Wally Armstrong, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to Wally Armstrong, who played on the PGA Tour for 11 years from 1973 to 1983. Wally, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
It's great being on the show with you, Jack.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Well, I grew up in the cornfields of Indiana on a little lake out there called Indian Lake, and played all sports. Golf seemed to be the one I liked the most. It was an individual sport, and I really got into it looking for golf balls and selling them across the fence to the golfers. I was a fairly lonely kid, and I had an alcoholic father who was gone most of the time, and so I wandered a lot, trying to just find out and figure out who I was. And so there were some very difficult years there. But I found my significance in my performance, in my athletic achievements, and I won the state high school and a number of state tournaments, was number one in the state in wrestling. So I was trying to gain that approval, but it just never seemed to come.
What was your mother like?
Well, Mom was really the caretaker. She was a wonderful woman, and, you know, we kind of were codependent on each other just to survive. But she was at all the games that I was hoping my dad would be at. Never missed a wrestling match, a football game. And she's still alive today, 86 years old, and plays golf a couple times a week and is just a wonderful inspiration to a lot of people.
You went to the University of Florida on a golf scholarship. Can you talk about that?
Well, that was a thrill. That was one of the top upcoming colleges in golf. And I had an offer to go down there on a scholarship, and took it. And it was just a fantastic experience, you know, where you can play golf year-round. And the competition was fantastic. Played with some good players, Bob Murphy, Steve Melnick. And we did really well in college.
You mentioned that you led a double life in college. Can you share with that?
Well, I was trying to fill the void in my life that you have a lot of times when you have an alcoholic situation. And I became involved in all kinds of athletics and athletic clubs, Letterman's Club. I joined a fraternity house, got into the alcohol and that lifestyle. And here I was the All-American kid to the coach, and I was this fraternity drunk. And I was just living two lives, and I just couldn't balance the two, and there was a lot of self-hatred, and I kind of filled that void with the alcohol and with the bragging and the lying and what goes with that.
You started to go to Fellowship of Christian Athlete meetings, eventually became an officer and then a chaplain of that. A lot of people know that term, but what is Fellowship of Christian Athletes?
Well, this is a national organization that really gets into high schools and junior highs and colleges, and they have athletes that meet together around the person of Jesus Christ and his life-changing values and his personal relationship that they can have. And I selfishly went to the meetings because I wanted to be able to say I was affiliated with some religious organization. And I pulled the wool over their eyes, Jack, because after two meetings they appointed me as their chaplain. And I like to say I was the first chaplain that ever lived that didn't have a prayer, literally. And fortunately, I got some answers real quick from our first meeting that I was supposed to do the devotion. We had a guest speaker, and so the Lord took the pressure off of me there.
One meeting you went to, the speaker was Ander Crenshaw. Can you talk about that?
That was that meeting. Ander came in. He was a law student, really bright guy, had played basketball for the University of Georgia, and he talked about having a personal relationship with Christ and that God had created us for that, to have a relationship with him and to walk with us. And I really had struggled with that because I just couldn't think that anyone would love me because I was looking at my performance. But Anders shared how God loved me enough to have sent his son to die for me, and that it wasn't my performance that would get me to heaven, but it was Christ's performance of living that perfect life and dying on the cross for my sins. And so I followed Anders, and he became what we call a spiritual father.
What did he go on to do?
Well, Anders in Congress now. He was a leader in the Senate at the House and the Florida State Congress. He also is in Congress now as a House of Representatives, and good golfer. I'm his golf teacher, so we still have a great relationship. This is 40 years ago, and that's what the wonderful thing is about having this relationship with Christ, is the friendships you build are forever.
We're talking to Wally Armstrong. When we come back, we'll ask him about becoming a caddy on the PGA Tour. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're talking to Wally Armstrong, who's just finished writing his sixth book, co-authored by Ken Blanchard, entitled The Mulligan. You become a caddy on the PGA Tour. How did that happen, Wally?
I was a caddy at an early age. It was one way that I could make some extra cents and dollars. Of course, it was cents back then. I started caddying for the club champion of the little nine-hole course, Indian Lake, and then worked my way up to being the number one caddy at the Highland Country Club. And I began to pick up some of the top bags and of the really good players. I remember watching the first guy, Tom Mady, shoot a 69. And that really inspired me to be a player. And then in college, of course, I've played my 4 years of college golf. And one of the PGA Tour players who was a Gator, Dave Reagan, asked me to speak at his house to some of the other college teams down there and to share my personal faith, and I did. And Dave says, why don't you come out on the PGA Tour and caddy for me some? We have a small group of pros that meet for a chapel. And I did. I went up and caddied for him in North Carolina and met Gary Player at the first Bible study meeting. That was such a thrill because he was such a great player back then. Lo and behold, the next week, Gary's caddy was ill and didn't come to Dallas, and here asked me to caddy for him in the first Preston Trail Byron Nelson Classic, and had the privilege of caddying for Gary 3 weeks in a row.
Is it true that he fired you?
Well, it was kind of an easy deal. I left some rotten bananas in his bag. He had a contract with his banana company, and I forgot to take them out after the second week, and they sat in his bag, these bananas, and it started raining, and I tried to get his rain gear unstuck and matted, and he looked at me and said, oh, Wooly. The next week, they had to take the caddies in Memphis, so I like to say, well, that was the end of my caddy career, but it was, it was the most embarrassing moment in my life, let me tell you.
How did you ever go from being a caddy to a professional on the PGA Tour?
Well, to show you the kind of person Gary is, earlier in the week at New Orleans, he watched me hit a couple balls on the range, and he said, Wally, you've got a great swing. You should be playing golf because you'll have a bigger platform to share your faith. And no one had really encouraged me in that direction to play professional golf on that level. So I got back from caddying from him in 3 weeks, even after the banana deal. And he sent me a staff bag, woods, irons, gloves, and balls. And so what an inspiration that was, and a sign. 10 years later, I playing a practice round with him at the Masters, and actually played behind him the last day where he shot a 64 to win the Masters. So that was a great blessing for me to just see where, you know, God had taken me along that road.
Who was the best you ever played with or against?
Well, I would have to say probably Jack Nicklaus. I played with all the greats back in the 70s and early 80s. But I think Jack was really the best I ever played with. Of course, Tiger, I've seen him play, and I think he's probably, overall the best I've ever seen in my life.
You played with two bigger-than-life figures, Trevino and Chichi. Can you give us a Trevino story and a Chichi story?
Oh, I remember playing with Lee Trevino in San Antonio, and we were in one of the last groups, and there were probably about 5,000 Mexicans following us, and they were giving him olés, and I was the bull. But the thrill I had there was shooting a 64 and setting a course record, and he shot 68. But I remember him on the last hole, which was very tight, a lot of water, very difficult hole, and I remember him standing up there talking about all the money he'd made and how it didn't really matter, what he shot. And I thought, well, that was pretty good psychology. I haven't got there yet myself. But what a great fella to play with. I think Chichi's the best. I played the next week in the Chichi Rodriguez Invitational in Puerto Rico and shot 63. So these guys inspired me to play, but I think it was because they really made you feel comfortable, and they're joking around, and they're encouraging the young players. I think more than anything, Trevino and Chichi, it didn't matter who you were, they weren't a respecter of people. They just loved the game, and they loved because they were both, they both came out of nothing, And so I think identified with someone like me who had been a survivor, and I was a grinder out on the tour.
The most you ever won in a tournament was $18,000 for finishing second. Your top year, you had 6 top 10 finishes, and you won that year $62,000. What do you think of this money today?
Well, I don't like to think about it. When you think about the tournament in Denver a few weeks ago, they have two cuts there, and the third cut they had. The guy that didn't even play on the last day made $62,000. So a guy could not even finish a tournament now and make as much money as I made my best year on the tour. But it's golf is a big game today, and I'm glad because I have a chance to teach now and to use the game to make the game better and to help people come into a relationship with Christ. So it's great that it is where it is.
You finished second 4 times in your career, but you never won a PGA tourney. Any regrets?
Well, I don't know if I'd be here today where I am if I had one. I don't like to look back and say, well, if this had happened, I'd be here or there. I think I've been able to look back as you get older and you see just why things happened the way they did. Back then and even today, you just have to be at the right place at the right time. Like I said, I set the record at the Masters with 8 under par. The next year, Fuzzy Zoeller shoots 8 under par and wins the tournament. So you just never know how things are going to work out in life. It's the matter of just giving your best at any moment and walking away knowing that God has a plan and that he's the one that's ultimately in control.
When we played together last weekend, you said something to me. You said God had to reparent you. What did you mean?
Well, I think every child grows up and their father is to be their, is God to them, and then there's to be a way where he teaches them about the things of God, and he loves them in a way that God the Father loves us. And then if you don't get that, then you're seeking, you know, you'll try to find that father somewhere. And for me, it was I kept trying to seek that father figure. And when I met Jesus Christ, then, you know, I had Jesus and I had his father, and they became, you know, and gave me my own significance. And so I had to let them love me. And it was very difficult when you feel unwanted and that you're not performing hard enough to be able to drop your guard and accept yourself and to accept God's love. There's a real reparenting, you know. It's like you have to just, he has to really become your father and love you the way that you were created to be loved.
We're talking to Wally Armstrong. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Wally Armstrong, who today uses golf to try to get people closer to God. Wally, a lot of us have issues with parents, brothers, sisters, friends. What advice do you give us about forgiving others?
Well, you can't really forgive others till you've forgiven yourself and until you really accept God's forgiveness. And I found that in my own life, is once I began to experience his forgiveness and his love. And of course, it says in the scriptures the great commandments is to love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and to love your neighbor as you love yourself. And I could not really love people and forgive people until I really looked at myself and made a choice to love myself, to accept myself the way God accepts me, with all my imperfections and all my doubts and past. And I think once you get to that point, then it's easy to forgive people. You have to certainly look at your own imperfections and inadequacies and realize you're forgiven. And once you get that cleansing and experience that, then the next step is to just make a choice, you know, to forgive people and realize that God has forgiven you and he commands us to do that. And it's difficult. But I know it really frees you up. It certainly freed me up in my own situation with my father. And I'm just so grateful that I'll be able to see him again sometime, because he did make that decision to follow Christ shortly before passing away.
When you do see him, what will you say to him?
I just want to give him a big hug and say, we made it. And you know, I know he was so thrilled that he had gone with my mother to a Billy Graham crusade in Indianapolis about a year before his death, and Billy talked about taking the slate that he was keeping my father's sins on, and he not only erased it but he threw it away. And Dad says, "That's the forgiveness I needed," and he shared that he took my mother's hand and went forward and made his commitment.
When we come back, we'll ask Wally Armstrong about a book written 75 years ago entitled The Transforming Friendship. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Wally Armstrong. And every day he says that Jesus is with him every second. Wally, a book written 75 years ago by Leslie Weatherhead entitled The Transforming Friendship. Can you talk to us about it?
This is a book that I picked up about 2 years ago, basically through my working on a little booklet for golfers that know Christ to be able to help them reach out to other golfers. With 26 million golfers in America and 52 million non-golfers that follow golf, there's a big market out there to build friendships. And so I started working on a little booklet, and as I got into this, I was reading a writer named Dallas Willard, and he spoke about Leslie D. Weatherhead and about a book called Transforming Friendship. I picked this up at a little bookstore up in Wisconsin and opened it up, and it just transformed my life just from the very first prologue, where he talked about we need to have a clear picture of Christ in our mind. One, as if he were here today, what would he be like, and how would you talk to him, and how would you talk to him as a friend, you know? And I'd never thought of that, Jack. I had struggled with knowing Christ. I just had an image of him floating around in a white robe and a beard, and I just couldn't seem to get in touch with him. But when Weatherhead said, imagine him as a real person, if he's been resurrected, then he's alive. And he suggested just pulling a chair up in front of you and imagine Jesus sitting there as a real person, you know, someone today that's up to date, you know, that's just like your best friend, you know, that you would talk to. And then just look over there at the chair and imagine him sitting there, and then begin to talk and begin to share your life and begin to share your dreams and your hopes and your doubts. And that's what I did. I just was sitting in my den in Orlando, and I was reading about this experiment that Leslie himself made. And I closed my eyes, and I imagined myself on a putting green, and I looked out, and I saw this young middle-aged guy out there with khaki pants and golf shoes, leaning on his putter, talking to and helping a junior golfer. And I said, now that's Jesus. I can talk to him. He's like me, you know. And he kind of turned, and then I just felt his presence next to me, and I realized that he'd really been there all along. I just didn't see him as a real person, and then I just kind of, you know, mentally just said, hi, I've missed you all these years, and I want to know you. And I just, I want to begin to develop this close friendship that you offer me. Then my life really began to change in big ways.
If Jesus was a golfer, would he be a scratch golfer or an 18?
Who knows? There's a lot of jokes about that. But I'll tell you what, a few months after making that decision and to where he became real like that, I was at Augusta, and I was following Arnold Palmer his last two rounds, and came up behind the 18th green and saw Ben Crenshaw talking to a tall, handsome guy with khaki pants and a master shirt on. And there was a big crowd around there, and I thought, now, who in the world is this guy? And I asked a spectator, I said, who is Ben Crenshaw talking to? And the person said, don't you know that's Jesus? And I said, what do you mean? And he says, that's Jim Caviezel, who played Jesus in The Passion. But see, people recognized him as a golfer. It was Jesus in golf clothes. Well, that just solidified to me that that's the whole picture of faith, is to see this real resurrected Christ in our lives and to talk to him as though he were our best friend. He's of course our Savior and he's our Lord, but I like to think of him as a friend and as a caddy. You know, he takes our baggage. He walks with us the fairways of life, you know, and he's our confidant and he's our best friend. And if you just watch the tour and you watch some of these caddies, you know, and the pros, they're almost one together, you know.
What would he say about my game, Wally?
He'd probably be congratulating you on your steadfastness. I'm telling you, Jack, you've got a lot of potential. I think, and you read the little book, The Transforming Friendship, it says that God looks at all the dormant possibilities in our life. And I think he would say that to you. I was trying to encourage you that way. You know, you've got a lot of great possibilities in there, but it's a matter of working it out, you know, and hopefully some of the little insights I gave you are going to pay off down the road.
That shoulder turn makes all the difference in the world.
So. Absolutely.
When you pray, when you talk to Christ, it's just like talking to him. Many people say, I don't know how to pray. What do I say? What do I do? What advice do you give people?
I think you just need to be as real as you can and realize that he understands your heart already. He looks into your heart. He knows your heart. He knows your past. He knows your future. And for us, prayer is really for us. It's for us to know him. That's the purpose, is to get, you know, our masks off and to share our soul, and then to lift others up and to show him how much we care about other people, and that we want to walk with him, and that hopefully our lives will transform other people's lives with our love, you know. As we accept his love, we accept ourselves, you know, and then we can love our neighbor. And we can love that golfer that's talking about Jesus, you know, but not in the same light that I would want to talk about him. I like to tell people it's a lot better to talk to Jesus before you hit rather than after you hit, because he really can't help you after you hit.
Yeah. But you use his name in vain a lot after you hit. For some people, they're very fearful of talking about Christ to others, especially men. You, it's very comfortable. It's a way of life with you. What advice do you give them?
Well, I think, you know, I don't come right up to people and start talking about Christ, Jack. I'm a chicken, you know. But I do love to befriend people, and I have three E's that I think about that are just kind of a way of life for me. And number one is I engage people. You know, Jesus engaged people. He went and talked to people. He initiated conversations. And so I like to engage people. You know, you get so much busy time. You're sitting on a plane or in a taxi. You're wherever it is, you can engage people. And then you can enjoy them. You can talk and ask questions and really make them feel special. And then encourage. I try to find something to encourage people with. Everyone needs encouragement. They want to be known. And we're, in that way, we are Christ to them, you know? And Christ can use us, and we can make a difference, you know? There are so many lonely souls out there that are just waiting for a friend, and I think that's the first step, is to befriend people. There's a saying that people don't care what you know until they know that you care. And so always the first step is to be genuine to people, you know? And to not interfere, you know, with their lives and push, you know, and slap them over the head with the Bible. I would never go towards people in that direction. But if you're friendly and honest and you ask some really nice questions about their lives, and then if God opens the door, then you step on in, you know. And if not, then, you know, then that was your goal, you know. Your goal is to befriend people as Jesus did.
You say that Christ has helped you find a balance between the pursuits of earth and the rewards of heaven. Share that with us.
Well, the balance is that, you know, when you accept Jesus Christ and you come into this relationship with him, then we are in the kingdom of heaven right now. The kingdom is now, because the kingdom is where the king is, and Jesus Christ is the king. And so I feel like now I like to live each day as though it's just a continuing, I'm just continuing on into this relationship with Christ. So I want to pursue everything I do with excellence, but start each step with him, you know? And, you know, a lot of times people think that if you imagine a race, you know, people think, you know, you run as hard as you can, and then just when you get to the finish line, you say, okay, Jesus, help me over the line, you know. I like to think about it like the Apostle Paul said. Maybe he was a golfer, you know, because in Caesarea is the only golf club in the east over there, and that's where Paul wrote this statement: I've fought the good fight, I've kept the faith, and I've finished the course. And so he had the whole thing there. So you start each day with Christ, and you stay with him, and then you finish with him, you know. And so we're created for this friendship and this relationship that's a continuing thing forever. And so why not build it every step along the way?
We're talking to Wally Armstrong. When we come back, we'll ask him about the new book, The Mulligan. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with Wally Armstrong. Wally, you have just finished your sixth book, this one with Ken Blanchard, entitled The Mulligan. Can you share the book with us?
Well, The Mulligan is about the is that life is a series of second chances. And on the golf course and also in our lives. And it's about the message is basically life is all about relationships and second chances. It's about a corporate man who's a golfer and millionaire, has kind of made it to the top, and he's looking for his next hill to climb, and he decides he's going to go play golf and play these pro-ams, and he's playing with in a big pro-am with Davis Love. And of course, he's your typical guy that is a 15, and he thinks he's a 4 handicap, and he's, of course, blowing his top and trying to impress Davis. And he gets it up on the ninth green about 4 feet for an eagle, net eagle, and everyone's out of the hole, and Davis lines up the putt, and he leaves it short. And he taps in, and then there goes the putter right out in the lake. He's got to go retrieve it and, of course, roll up his pants. And as he goes to the 10th tee, Davis says, sir, he says, you're really not that good to get that mad. And that is the major kind of starting point that he realizes that his life is in shambles. He's got no control, and Davis refers him to an old pro who becomes a father and a friend that he never had, and he meets him on the porch, and then they start this relationship where the old pro begins to love him the way he's never been loved as a father figure. He becomes a friend and begins to tell him there is a second chance. There is an ultimate mulligan that God gives us, and that's a relationship with him, a second chance to really enjoy life, to really become what we were created to be. And that comes through accepting God's second chance, which is Jesus Christ. In the book, we talk that Jesus played the perfect round for us and offers us his scorecard. We have to turn in a scorecard at the end of our lives, and it has to be perfect. And that's why Jesus lived the perfect life for us and died on the cross, so that we could have his scorecard. At the end of our lives, we are offered his card, which he signed, and we just sign up, and it's a free gift. And when we turn in the card, we have eternal life.
Where did you get the idea for this book?
Well, it's something I've thought about for a long time. We've got some guys that fellas that have been doing golf ministry for years, and we talked about this beautiful analogy about the mulligan in life, and when you read the Old Testament, the New Testament, it's all about mulligans. God just continually giving people second chances. So to bring it into this type of an analogy, it's really easy for golfers to understand the gospel that way, Jack. And so I started working on this book 4 or 5 years. I've been kind of working on the idea and the concept, and when I saw Ken, he says, "I think this thing about that Jesus is the ultimate mulligan, I think it's the greatest thing I've ever heard of." And he says, "I really want to do this book with you." So we've been working on it 2 years, and we feel like it's really going to give people hope that they can really have a second chance in their life. The corporate guy also gets back together with his son, and he gets a mulligan with his son. And it's a great book of restoration. So hopefully it will be a real encouragement to every golfer and to people as they read it.
You told me last week that someone once said that 18 holes of golf is a perfect microcosm of life on Earth, a series of small decisions, each affecting the next. Can you talk about that?
Well, it surely is. This is the way life is. And the key is to keep an even keel and to just take everything that comes and to learn from it, you know, and to hopefully the next step is a little better than the last one. And our pastor says that when you walk with Christ, the best is always yet to come. And so there's always another hill to climb. And fortunately, with God's leading, we don't have to fear what's over the next one, you know? And if we focus on the right priorities, then we'll make the cut, you know, and we will live a fulfilled life no matter what age we start this journey.
You're one of America's premier golf instructors. For our golf listeners tonight, what one or two pieces of advice would you give them?
I would say, first of all, take some lessons. Only 10% of the golfing population in America, Jack, have ever been taken a lesson. And so golf's a difficult sport. It's not a natural game. Ben Hogan said if you played golf by natural instinct, you'd never finish a round. I like to talk about it as being it's like getting into your auto and the steering wheel is stuck in the passenger door and you have to drive sideways. You're pointing to the right and you got to drive to your left. It's a difficult game, and I would say lessons is the first thing. And then the second thing is to keep it simple, you know, and to trust your swing when you go out and play. Greatest problem I see in these pro-ams is amateurs are still playing driving range swing when they're on the golf course. They're still trying to put their swing together, and they're telling themselves where their elbow is, where their hips are, and you just can't play golf that way. You have to trust in a simple concept and have a picture in your mind, which is, of course, my central picture that I give people is to just swing the club in a circle and let the circle run into the ball and then the ball run into the hole. And that's as simple as it gets.
You're a golf instructor, a lot of videos, a lot of tools to use, books. How can our listeners learn more about these things?
Well, they can go to wallyarmstrong.com. That's probably the best way. There, a lot of them are in bookstores, in golf stores, department stores. And so that's the best way to get a hold of me.
What dreams or goals do you still have?
Well, my goals are to continue to be the best father and grandfather that I can be and husband. I think I'd love to write some more books. And play with people like yourself, you know, where I can be an encouragement and be encouraged.
What are you the proudest of?
Oh, boy. I don't know. I just, I think I'm just happy, you know, that God has blessed me in so many ways. And I think that I'm the proudest that I've probably overcome so much with the background that I had. I could be an alcoholic. I could be a bum. And praise God that he's delivered me to where I can really make a difference in other people's lives. And he certainly has given me the power to make a difference in my own life.
45 seconds. Last question. What advice do you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I would just say, just don't sacrifice your life today for, you know, quick fixes. Take the time to really think long-term for your life. And most of all, make a decision to follow Jesus Christ. Not to be religious, but to have a relationship with him, and it'll make all the difference in the world for your life.
Wally Armstrong, you are a world-class golfer, but you're even better as a person to teach us to have a closer relationship with God. Thanks for being on.
Thank you, Jack. God bless you.
Our guest next Sunday will be the Wizard, the St. Louis Cardinals Hall of Fame shortstop, Ozzie Smith. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall home.